Good morning. It's good to see everybody here this morning. For Wednesday night, please prepare for Joshua chapters 9 through 12. David Griffin will be leading the study Wednesday night, Joshua chapters 9 through 12. Few preliminary notes this morning as we get started. First of all, thanks to so many who have contributed to the learning of all of the children. A number of our teachers have been handing out things that they would have had in their classes if we'd had our regular format for Bible classes. And we appreciate that so much. It will definitely help the children, and it's a very wise investment of your time in these young minds who are so willing and so eager to learn about the one and only true God of heaven and of earth. So we appreciate that so very much. Glad that you can do that. Our very dear sister, Gloria Dorsey, sent me an email just before class started Wednesday night. And these are her comments about our class from Wednesday night, Joshua chapters 1 through 4. She says, God expects us as his children to place our trust in him and to do exactly what he tells us to do. And we will have no doubt that he is with us and will never leave us, and that we can trust him to direct our paths in this life. In order to know what is expected of us and the way we are to live, we have to meditate on the word daily and open up our hearts to what is written. God wants us to have a relationship with him, and he definitely wants a relationship with us. It was no different for both Moses and Joshua. I thought that was a very good comment, very good commentary on our class from Wednesday night, and certainly I think it applies to the entire term. We have folks who are joining us by way of the live stream this morning. We appreciate you being with us this morning. And I got a call from Marcella House last Sunday, I think it was, and then also Wednesday night. Some of you may not be aware of this, but Marcella House now has a smartphone. She is armed and dangerous, folks. She has a smartphone, and she's able to pull it up and to see our classes and our worship services. Isn't that great? And she and Brother Carl McMurray, who are in the same facility, are doing that. We certainly appreciate them being a part of this class this morning, and as well as all the others who, for lots of health reasons and other reasons, cannot be here this morning. And they're accessing this class by way of the live streaming. We certainly appreciate and welcome all of them. So in order to welcome all of them, I'd like for all of us to say a very loud good morning to all of these folks and to welcome them as a part of our class. So let's give them a great big loud JP good morning. Good morning! We appreciate you all being with us. We certainly understand the reasons you cannot, and we hope that times will come where that can be the possibility for all of us. This morning we're looking at Joshua chapters 5 through 8. Joshua chapters 5 through 8. And hopefully you've prepared, and you've prepared your children as well, to enter into the class and to make contributions to the class as well. I want to cover just a couple of things in Joshua chapter 5, and then we have something kind of special this morning for us. In Joshua chapter 5, verse 6, it says, "For the sons of Israel walked 40 years in the wilderness until all the nation, that is, the men of war who came out of Egypt, perished because they did not listen to the voice of the Lord, to whom the Lord had sworn that he would not let them see the land which the Lord had sworn to their fathers to give us, a land flowing with milk and honey." Here is a very quick Reader's Digest version of what happened during that 40 years. It tells what happened and what went on and everything about all of that. And so this is a good verse to rely on just as a quick summary of what took place during those years. And then in verse 12, Joshua chapter 5, verse 12. Let's begin in verse 10 rather. Let's do that. "While the sons of Israel camped at Gilgal, they observed the Passover on the evening of the 14th of the month on the desert plains of Jericho. And on that day, after the Passover, on that very day, they ate some of the produce of the land, unleavened cakes and parched grain. And the manna ceased on the day after they had eaten some of the produce of the land, so that the sons of Israel no longer had manna, but they ate some of the yield of the land of Canaan during this year. This is a great turning point in the people of Israel, great turning point in their history. And so you find that they had observed the Passover. The thought is that they had not observed the Passover during those 40 years of wandering. I don't know if that's exactly the case, but that's the thought, that they didn't observe the Passover all those years. But now that they are in the land, they observed the Passover. And they did that on the evening of the 14th day. This is thought to be the Friday evening, what we would call Friday evening after 6 o'clock. Passover would normally have been on the Sabbath. And so then it says in verse 11, the day after the Passover, which would be the first day of the week. They then ate of the produce of the land, and the manna ceased on the day after they had eaten, which I think here in this case means Monday. Here's a huge turning point, very big change in the history of these people. The manna that they had lived on all those years no longer was available to them. God had provided for them, had provided their needs all these years, but now they can have the produce of the land themselves. So a couple of key points there in relation to that. Now, this morning, I'm not seeing our special guest. We have a special guest. Oh, we do have a, okay. We have a very special guest this morning. And he arrived here by way of time travel. Now, I'm not exactly 100% sure, but I think he came in on a teleporter that may have been designed by Harrison Alexander. Now, I saw pictures of this thing. To me, it looks like a Bankston motorhome, but maybe it's not. Maybe it really is a real live teleporter. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to introduce to you the leader of the people of Israel, Joshua. And here we see his picture. Here we see a picture of him that was sent ahead of time. And so Joshua is here. Thank you for coming, sir. We appreciate it so much. It's not easy to get away from the people of Israel, is it? This is called a microphone. And what it does is it amplifies your voice, not only here in this auditorium, but around the world. Yeah, you don't have to holler. So give it a try there. Say hello to the people.
Hello. Hello.
All right, so here we have Joshua with us this morning, and I asked him to come in order to give us some verification of what we understand to be the battle plan for the taking of Jericho. Jericho was the first city that the Israelites came to, and they were to take it and to capture it. And so, Joshua, the way I understand this thing worked, the way this battle plan worked, was that the people of Israel were told by God to march around the city once each day for 6 days. And they were to do so with a certain piece of the men of war in the front, and then some priests with ram's horns, then the Ark of the Covenant, and then the rest of the men of war. And as they did that each time, the priests were blowing on the ram's horn. Is that right?
Yes, yes, that was the plan.
Okay, and here we have a ram's horn. Believe it or not, this is a real live, no doubt about it, genuine, that's the way we pronounce it in Tennessee, genuine ram's horn. And so this is what they were blowing on. And so the way I understood it, that was the case for 6 days, but on the seventh day, you all marched around seven times. Okay, and then after that seventh time, then the priest blew a real loud, long blast on the ram's horn. The people were to shout, and then the walls were going to fall flat. That was the plan?
That was the plan, yes, sir.
Well, you know, I can't help but wonder, that seems to be pretty elaborate. That seems to be pretty complicated. But I can't help but wonder, what would have happened If maybe you all had just marched around the city once each of 3 days, I mean, that'd be a lot easier. Just do it once a day for 3 days. Or maybe instead of doing it 7 times on the seventh day, you just did it once on the seventh day like you did the other 6. Would that have worked?
I don't believe so. That's not what God commanded.
Oh, so you did exactly what God commanded, huh?
Yes.
Oh, that's great. Okay, wonderful. All right, well, tell me, how did the plan work out? Was the conquest successful?
Yes, the plan worked just as God said it would.
Whoa, that's great. That's great. So when you all shouted and they blew the horn and you all shouted, the walls fell flat.
Yes, they did.
Now, we have a lot of people here that do something that I know you're not familiar with called video games. And I think in a lot of these video games, if you're attacking a city and you try to beat down and crush its wall, how do those walls fall? A lot of times they fall in. They fall in. They don't necessarily fall flat in their place. But that's what the scriptures tell us. They fall absolutely flat. Which might indicate what from anybody in the class? Brother Herbert? I'm sorry. The earth may have given way. But certainly this was the work of God, wasn't it? It wasn't their own power. It wasn't the people of Israel's power at all, was it? It was God's power that caused those walls to fall. Well, Joshua, we thank you so much for being here with us today. And I know that leading the people of Israel, that's a big deal. And you've got to get back to some of those tasks that you have.
So we're getting back now.
Yes, thank you so much. Thank you for being here. He did pretty well with that microphone thing, didn't he? Given he's, you know, something like 5,000 years old or something like that. And so, when we look at the conquest of Jericho, we find these are the facts of the situation. And just like Joshua confirmed and verified for us, this is the way that it happened. It wasn't by their power, it was by God's power. And so the walls fell down. They fell flat. Literally, it means in their place. Everything was destroyed except for the silver, the gold, the bronze, the iron, and all those things were to go into the treasury of the Lord. All that was to go into God's treasury. That's exactly what God had said. And how about Rahab's house? How about Rahab's house? Whose house in Jericho, this is for all the kiddos, those up through about the sixth grade, whose house was not destroyed when Jericho was taken? Harrison? Rahab's. Why was it not destroyed? All right, she put the scarlet cord out the window, didn't she? And that was a clear sign to the Israelites, don't take this house, don't destroy this house. Everybody of her family, everybody that she held dear, was going to be in that house, and they were going to be spared. Now, I personally would have gotten a great big orange flag with a white power T on it. I would have put that out, because surely they would see that. Now, a scarlet cord, that might be kind of hard to see. You might not be able to see that if you're kind of in a hurry conquering a city. And so I think I would have put a great big orange flag with a white power T on it. Would that have worked? Why not? Why would that not have worked? Okay, be nice, not yourselves. Yeah, that's not what they were commanded to do. Exactly. That was the agreement between the two spies and Rahab. She did exactly. And you remember Wednesday night we talked about her being a person of faith. She was someone who did exactly what she was told to do. And so we're going to sing a couple of songs at this point. We're going to sing a couple of songs. Michael is going to lead us in "The Walls Came Tumbling Down." And then another song that we're going to sing is the song "Obedience." So, Michael, if you would. with this song, I'm going to need a little bit of help, and Ethan Barnes is going to come up and help me lead this one. It's one that I think most of us know. We've sung it in VBS a number of times, and this is a song that is really important to what we find in the book of Joshua, particularly here with the conquest of Jericho. Now, I don't think we've ever done any hand motions with this song, have we, Mike, Lee? I don't think we've ever done it. I don't think we've ever done that. So let me suggest a couple of motions. You know, you all know what this is. You know what song that is. Wise men built his house on the rock. And then you know this one. You remember that? I may never march in the infantry and all of that. Well, in this one, when we get to the part where it says, action is the key, let's go like that. Action is the key. Do it immediately. Point at your watch. Do it immediately. Now's the time, and joy you will receive. So, action is the key. Do it immediately. Joy you will receive. Okay? Are you ready, Ethan? Okay. Obedience is the very best. Thank you, Ethan. Joshua chapter 7. Joshua chapter 7. We see trouble at the city of Ai. Joshua chapter 7. Trouble at the city of Ai. Those of you who are grades 7 through 12, who wants to tell us the story, the account of what happened at Ai? Okay, those of you who are streaming, we do in fact have people here who are grades 7 through 12. They're just a little bit bashful. So, who wants to tell us the story as best as you can about what happened at Ai? I've got a hand from somebody. Okay, we're going to let the farmers, we're going to let the old folks tell it. Okay, folks, tell us, what happened? What happened at the Battle of Ai? Somebody give us a start. Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead. Did you say something, Neil? And then I didn't see Bella there. You're deferring to Bella? Okay, go ahead, Bella. Okay. They killed Achan. Okay, so Joshua was going to send about 2,000 to 3,000 men to the city of Ai. Joshua had sent spies into the city, and they took a look at it, and they said, it's a small place. It's a small city. Just send 2,000 or 3,000. We don't need to send everybody. Numbers are important, so that's the reason I'm emphasizing this 2,000 to 3,000. It's not a big deal. We'll just send 2,000 or 3,000 there, and we'll take that city, no big deal. But they went up to Ai, and what happened? Bella told part of that. What happened? Jonathan? Yeah, they lost, and 36 of them died. Now, I don't expect everybody to be able to do this, but the percentage of 36, just in round numbers, the percentage of 36 is of 2,000 to 3,000 is about how much? About 1%. It's about 1.2 to 1.5%. That's not very many, is it? Not very many at all. But yet, these 36 died as a result of it, and they were routed. The people of Israel were routed. They retreated from taking the city of Ai. And so, chapter 7, verse 6, Joshua tore his clothes. The hearts of the people had melted, as recorded in verse 5. And he fell on his face before the ark of the Lord until the evening, both he and the elders of Israel, and they put dust on their heads. This was a common symbol of great grief, of great mourning. And so they would put dust on their heads. Here in our time, we might go to a memorial service and we might dress in dark clothes. And so very similar to that, they would put dust on their heads. And so here they are, and they're mourning the great loss of about 1% of their people as a result of this. And they couldn't take the city. And so those of you who are between this junior high, 7th grade through about 12th grade, verses 6 through 9, can you put that in your own words? What's really happening here in verses 6 through 9 in your own words? You want some help from some of the farmers? Some of the older folks. Put in your own words what happened in verses 6 through 9 of Joshua chapter 7. What's said there? David? Yeah, even though these people had seen everything God had done, even though they saw the power of God. You remember Wednesday night they came across the Jordan River on dry ground. You remember the waters were backed up in a huge heap of at least 14 feet high, and it went 7 to 30 miles, depending on which commentary you read. They saw all of that, and yet they went to take this city, and now they doubt themselves. They doubt. Huge doubts. Who else wants to characterize this? Explain it to us. Jeff? Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did. He wanted to know. He said, why did this happen? All right. Daniel?
Joshua said, it might have been better for us just to stay on the other side of the Jordan than to come here and lose. And God kind of says, get up.
Yeah, Joshua seems to say here, you know, maybe it'd been better if we just stayed on the east side of the Jordan. This thing going over to the west side of the Jordan, that's not working out so well. Maybe we should have just stayed over there on the east side and been content with that. And we'll get to in just a minute to what God's reply to all that is. But yeah, started having these kinds of doubts and thinking, maybe we should have just been content with just staying over there. You know, maybe God, your plan's not so good after all. Maybe doubting God a bit. Anybody else? Verses 6 through 9. Yeah, they saw themselves now as vulnerable. They take Jericho, and when they did exactly what God said, things went great. But now there's a little bit of challenge to them. There's a bit of a confrontation here, and all of a sudden they feel very vulnerable. Let's take a look at these verses just real quickly. Joshua said, yes, sir.
It wasn't a surprise. It shouldn't have been because they didn't
Yeah, exactly. Mike says they didn't do what God said. And we'll talk about that in just a minute. But they should have realized that, but they didn't do what God said. So that's what really started, particularly going back to what Mike said. In verse 1, we get the answer. Joshua chapter 7, verse 1, we get what the answer is. Then we see the story. And then, starting in verse 10, we get the rest of the story. So here in verse 6, or actually verse 7, excuse me. Alas, O Lord God, why didst thou ever bring this people over the Jordan, only to deliver us into the hand of the Amorites, to destroy us? If only we had been willing to dwell beyond the Jordan. O Lord, what can I say, since Israel has turned their back before their enemies? Israel has turned and fled and run for their lives. Verse 9, for the Canaanites and all the inhabitants of the land will hear of it, and they will surround us and cut off our name from the earth. And what wilt thou do for thy great name? I don't know for sure. Sounds like maybe there's a little bit of an accusation towards God here. Now what are you going to do, God? Things went well at Jericho. Now they're not going so well. And we're going to be odious among all the people of the earth. They're going to all laugh at us whenever we try to attack. And now what are you going to do, God? I want to relate this just for a second to our theme for 2020 at Jordan Park. These folks had a problem with hindsight, insight, and faith sight. Listen to what Joshua said. He looks back, and in verse 7, he says, if we'd only been willing to dwell on the east side of the Jordan. He's looking back with hindsight, but his hindsight's not very good, is it? And let me just mention something to those of you who are younger. Hindsight can be a great help. Hindsight can be a great hindrance. It can be both. And sometimes when we get to the ages that some of us in this auditorium are, we look back on decisions that we made. You know, what would have happened if I had taken that job or not taken that job? What would have happened if we hadn't moved here or if we had moved there? What would have happened if I had married so-and-so rather than the person I married? Hindsight can be a great trap. It can mire us down. But I'm going to tell you, from my experience, every time that you use hindsight and you go back and look longingly towards those prior days, I'm going to tell you that most likely there's gobs of blessings that you're neglecting to recognize. There's huge heaping gobs of blessings that you're failing to realize that God blessed you with. Oh yeah, things might have been different. Things might have been worse. You don't know. But God's blessings, you probably had some blessings that you wouldn't have had otherwise. If nothing other than the blessing of learning you shouldn't have made that particular decision and you needed to do better research. Brother Brian.
Situation today in the world around us with the government and all the unrest that we have and all that, the lesson here, and especially for the younger people, they'll keep this in mind. When you're about to get to verse 10, the question that God asked in verse 10, he already knew the answer to. And the point he's about to make, and you'll reinforce it, is we have a saying you may have heard your parents said, or some people may not be familiar with it. Those who ignore the lessons of the past are doomed to repeat them. And that is exactly what God is asking when he asked that question. When you look back, you don't look at the negative, but you may look at the negative, but you learn from the mistakes you've made. And you learn from the blessings that you've been given. And that's exactly the point God is about to make with them when he asked that question in verse 10. When he asked why, Joshua was asking, why are we out here? Why are we defeated? Why are we going to be given over to the Amorites? Was he looking back correctly and learning? And that's what God's about to ask him and tell him.
Yeah.
And the lesson is, learn from the mistakes and learn from the blessings from the past.
Yeah. So in regard to this hindsight, I'll get you in just a second. from the lesson, what Brian said is there's an expression, those who fail to learn from history are doomed to repeat it. And so we've got to look back and learn from it, both those things that went well, those things that didn't go so well. Landon? Yeah, yeah. Just like Jeff said, why? That's our first question. That's the way we are as humans. We want to know why. We want to see the answer. Yeah, and so we have to, that's just a natural, normal condition, just like you said in the book of Job. Job certainly asked why a lot of times, didn't he? Allison? Yeah, for those of you who could not hear and those of you who are on the live stream, what Allison said, if I can paraphrase that, and if I don't get it exactly right, let me know. But when they were talking over this particular section of Scripture with their kids, they looked at that and they said, you know, just a few chapters before, the people of Israel received the blessings and the cursings, and they were very clearly told, things are not going to go well for you if you disobey God. And yet now here, after this situation at Ai, they start to say, well, what's going on? How could this be? The answer probably wasn't all that far from them. They probably could have thought just a smidge more about it and understood that there was sin in the camp. So this is the hindsight. Let's look real quickly at the insight. And so Joshua goes on. He says, what can I say? Verse 8, what can I say since Israel has turned their back before the enemies? And so his insight into the problem is, well, we just got afraid and we turned our back on the enemies. That's what we did. But then look at the faith sight. Look at his faith sight in verse 9. The Canaanites and all the inhabitants of the land will hear it. They'll surround us, cut off our name from the earth. And what wilt thou do for thy great name? His faith sight into it is, we're doomed. We're doomed. We don't have any faith. It's all over. Game over. Doesn't matter anymore. That was his faith sight into the problem. But look what God says. Daniel previewed this just a minute ago. Look what God says in verse 10. Rise up. Why is it that you have fallen on your face? Israel has sinned, and they have also transgressed my covenant which I commanded them. They have even taken some of the things under the ban and have been that and have both stolen and deceived. Moreover, they have also put them among their own things. God said, Joshua, let me give you a wake-up call here. Israel has sinned. Go fix the problem. This is what's happened. Somebody stole something that was under the ban. They took something for their own selfish reasons. And he said, you got to fix it. You got to fix it now. Don't take time. You got to fix it. You got to take care of the problem. And so they go through a process. And since we do not have the luxury of time this morning, let me just run through that. They went through a process, and Achan and his family were selected. Achan was the one who took of the things that were under the ban. And so when you get down to verse 25, Joshua chapter 7, verse 25, Joshua is talking to Achan and he says, why have you troubled us? The Lord will trouble you this day. And as a result, he and all of his family were stoned. They were killed. Why do you trouble us? This same expression is used a couple of other times in the scriptures. And I'll just ask you to note this. 1 Kings chapter 18, verses 16 through 17. Ahab says to Elijah, oh, you troubler of Israel. Here you are, Elijah. You're coming to me, King Ahab, and you're the troubler of Israel. And Elijah goes back to him and says, no, 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 no. You're the one who's troubling Israel. You and your unrighteous acts are what's troubling Israel. Galatians chapter 1, verse 7, we find that the Galatians had been troubled by some who were pushing false doctrine. And so he tells them there, you Galatians, I marvel, I'm amazed that you're so quickly removed from the gospel that you were taught, but it's because there's some people who are troubling you. And so we have to be on guard for that. We've got to look out for those who would teach false doctrine. We have to look out and make sure that even if it's not false doctrine, if it is a matter of judgment, that we don't trouble one another sometimes. We've got to watch for that in the Lord's congregation. And so they are wiped out, and then they go on to then, Achan and his family are wiped out. They go on then to conquer the city of Ai. Anybody want to tell me how many soldiers they took with them the second time? You remember Bella very nicely told us about 2,000 to 3,000 the first time. How many did they take the second time? Bella? 30,000, a future accounted in the making. This is great. I love it. 30,000. They're going to make sure they take this place this time. And so they take 30,000 with them, and they're able to take the city. All those who went up, they were able to take the city, and they did so by way of ambush. They set up an ambush. They said they went in, they drew the men of Ai out, and then another set of the Israelites came in and took over the city. The men of Ai were caught in between the two large forces of the children of God. So set in an ambush, and that's how that was conquered. Joshua chapter 8, verse 34 through 35. And this is a question for all the farmers. This is a question for all of those who are college age and above. Joshua 8, 34 through 35. Then afterward, this is Joshua, afterward he read all the words of the law, the blessing and the curse, like Allison mentioned earlier that Joshua had done, and like Moses also had done, according to all that is written in the book of the law. There was not a word of all that Moses had commanded which Joshua did not read before all the assembly of Israel, with the women and the little ones and the strangers who were living among them. Farmers, what's significant about these two verses? What is important about these two verses? Easiest question of the day.
They were reminded. We have to be reminded.
Okay.
They spent 40 years walking around watching a miracle every day. They went to Jericho, and something as crazy as just walking around a city caused the walls of a great city to fall down, and they could walk into the city.
Yeah.
The next place they went, they were beaten. Oh, what's wrong with us? God's word is true. And you have to be reminded of that. And he makes a promise. He keeps his promises.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's they're reminding them, here are the promises, here are the curses. Remember this.
For those of you who didn't really know, Brian was here Wednesday night. I think he memorized Wednesday night. That's exactly what we said. God is the God of promises kept. And these people needed to be reminded of that. And you remember Wednesday night, we had the 12 stones up here on the stage. And the fact that they were told to take these 12 stones. And later generations, when the children would ask, what are these stones all about? And the children of Israel were told, those 12 stones came from this Jordan River when we crossed over it on dry land. And so it was a reminder. It's something that they needed to know about. And so that's the case here with this verse as well. Any other comments, David?
He's also pointing out there is a guide. It's not just, I pray to the Lord today and figure out what we're going to do today. And that sort of thing. It's not capricious. It's not just instantaneous or anything like that. He's given you the law. He's given you this law back 40 years ago. You knew all these things. It's written down. Let me remind you of this.
Yeah. It's not one and done. It's every single day. God's word is there to guide us. Daniel? Yeah. It takes both to motivate us, doesn't it? Yeah, Daniel said the blessings and the curses. It takes both to motivate us. That's what helps us to understand. Brother Alexander, and then Brother Jansen, and then we'll have one final closing comment.
Well, just seconding what Daniel said, there's a balance of blessing.
Yeah, that's the exact same thing I had in mind as well, which is why you see on the screen, all. Simple, three-letter word. Maybe the most powerful three-letter word in the English language. He read all. They heard all. All the people were there. Look, I think four times, if you count it, four times the word all is used in those two short verses. Go ahead, Cheryl. Okay, so Cheryl's comment was that God in the Old Testament gives us a great picture of who we are as well. He tells us how huge our sin is. And just like here, the sin with Achan, it demanded punishment. Our sins demand punishment as well, Romans 3:23 and 6:23. All have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. Chapter 6, verse 23 says that the wages of sin is death. We all deserve that. But we also see the love of God. It took the life, the sinless life of Christ and His blood to cleanse us from those sins. Jansen?
Go back to 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 3. Totally, the first fall. And you read verse 6. In this you greatly rejoice, though now for a little while you have been grieved by various trials, that the genuineness of your faith, being much more precious than gold that perishes, though it is tested by fire. I thought that was wonderful to know that we will be tested because he loves us. He wants us to grow. He wants us to climb up further than he has been.
Yeah. So, just reference, mark down 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 3 through the end of the chapter, I think you said, and particularly verse 6, through verse 12, that's right, I'm sorry, through verse 12, but particularly verse 6. Just like they were tried, just like they were tested, we are tried, we're tested also. And so we've got to be faithful. Just like they came through this, we can as well through our trials and temptations. Thank you all so much. Very good class this morning. Wednesday night, 7 o'clock. Joshua chapters 9 through 12.